All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am recapping and reacting to the Falcons' 3-year contract extension of offensive tackle Ty Sambrello.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalFans.com, on Twitter at FalFans, and of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are sort of giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' announcement of signing offensive tackle Ty Sambrello to a 3-year contract extension on Tuesday morning, afternoon, whenever it was, and sort of giving my thoughts on that move and sort of how it sort of potentially impacts what the Falcons may do at the offensive tackle and a little to a lesser degree, the rest of the offensive line this offseason. We don't know quite yet what the terms of Sambrello's contract extension is like. My guess is that it's probably averaging him about $2 to $2.5 million a year as the floor, possibly lower, but more than likely in that range. And the ceiling is somewhere in the $3 to $4 million range. My guess is over 3 years, you're probably talking about a contract that's probably in the range of worth $8 to $10.5 million. Obviously, if the Falcons can get Sambrello under that $8 million mark, it's a relative bargain. If it goes above that $10.5 million mark over 3 years, then I think the Falcons probably grossly overpaid for Ty Sambrello. So we'll find out over the next week or so, you know, sort of what his contract terms are, you know, as that sort of trickles out. But basically, those numbers I just used are sort of based around sort of recent contracts at offensive tackles. Like you saw last offseason, a number of offensive tackles that were basically signed under 1-year, $2.5 million deals that were brought in to compete for starting jobs. Guys like Cameron Fleming in Dallas, Donald Stevenson, I think, with the Broncos, and Ben Ajalana with the Jets. Those guys were basically seen as high-level swing tackles, low-level starters for their prospective teams. And I think that's sort of where the Falcons should at least try to value Ty Sambrello. We'll find out again whether or not that comes true. You know, a lot of people sort of raise the question of what does this mean about Ryan Schrader? I don't think the Falcons extending Ty Sambrello has a direct effect on what their plans are with Ryan Schrader. Although, as I've said over basically consistently over the last month or so, that I do think the Falcons are planning on moving on from Ryan Schrader. My expectation is that we'll hear that sort of announced closer to March, and the Falcons will designate him a post June 1 cap cut at the beginning of the free agency period. And so I don't think it was a situation where the Falcons were like, we can either keep Ryan Schrader or keep Ty Sambrello, and we had to get let one of those guys go. But I do think the fact that the Falcons were already planning on getting rid of Ryan Schrader, which made them probably a little bit more willing to sweeten the pot a little bit to Ty Sambrello more than likely. So I think they're indirectly related, but not directly related. You know, I think this move, I don't think it really solves the Falcons' offensive tackle situation because I don't really see Ty Sambrello as a viable season-long starter. I think, you know, obviously he finished the 2018 season well. He had 3.5 solid games as a right tackle for the Falcons, and I say 3.5 because the first half of that Tampa Bay Buccaneers game in week 17, he played at left guard. But other, you know, those 3.5 games he had over that final month of the season, he played reasonably well. And as I talked about in my offensive line review episode a couple of weeks ago, I think that sort of was, you know, you look at the offensive line unit as a whole during that stretch of games with Zane Beatles and Ben Garland getting some rotational reps and whatnot, that I think the offensive line probably played their best offensive football of the season over that final month of the season in the stats seem to back it up, as I mentioned in that episode, and go back and listen to that episode to get more details about that. But I don't think 3.5 good games from Ty Sambrello now means, oh, well, the Falcons can trust him to be a season-long starter. I think, you know, and I think I said this in the offensive line review, I think when you watch Ty Sambrello, his issues still exist. The struggles that he has with staying in front of speed, the fact that he doesn't have great functional strength, the fact that he's limited as a straight-ahead run blocker, you know, I think those issues still exist. You still saw them in his game over that last month of the season. I just think those issues weren't really consistently exposed during that last month of the season. And I think you put him as a starter for 16 games, particularly when he's going to be facing guys like J.J. Watt and Cameron Jordan and Michael Bennett, potentially, if the, assuming the Eagles decide to keep him, among several other players that are top-end left ends and left outside linebackers that the Falcons are going to face in 2019. I think those issues are going to get exposed quite a bit. I think the thing that you like about Ty Sambrello and the thing that you consistently like about Ty Sambrello is that he's most effective blocking on the move, blocking in space. That's where he's effective. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why you think he has potential as a guard. But as we saw in that regular season finale, you know, to be fair, though, he was blocking guys like Gerald McCoy and Vita Vea, which aren't necessarily the types of players that you would expect him to succeed against on the inside. But, you know, I think Ty Sambrello is a functional to good swing tackle is the point I'm trying to get at. I think if you're expecting him to be more than that, I think you're basically setting yourself up for disaster. So I think my hope is that the Falcons paid Ty Sambrello like they thought of him as a swing tackle, which again is in that $2 to $2.5 million range over 3 years or potentially less. Once you start getting up into the $3 million range, I think that's okay because my assumption is that that is going to then be a deal that's kind of backloaded and it's, you know, it'll be read as like a 3 year, $10.5-11 million deal or something like that. But in reality, it's really more of a 2 year, like $6 million deal or something like that, you know? So like that is sort of where my hope is if we start creeping up on the upper end of that. But, you know, we'll come back in a moment and talk a little bit deeper about sort of what this move does and how it impacts the Falcons' free agent and draft plans at the offensive tackle position in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know that since we're going to be talking offseason, I got to let you guys know about the two draft podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. The first one is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. The second is the Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino. Find them wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, where you can find those guys and other people's written content and video content devoted to the 2019 NFL Draft, your team every day. So I think the move of retaining Ty Sambrello makes the Falcons less likely that they're going to spend money on a free agent right tackle. I don't think it really changes their plans as far as the draft goes, and we'll sort of circle back to that in a moment. But I think you, right now you sort of, if I'm evaluating the Falcons roster and then also sort of guessing how they're evaluating the roster, they're good to go at left tackle with Jake Matthews. There's a big question mark at right tackle. And whether they decide to retain Ryan Schrader, there's a long-term question mark at right tackle as far as, because even if the Falcons do somehow decide to retain Ryan Schrader as their starting right tackle this year, they can't count on Ryan Schrader to be anything more than a one-year stopgap at that position. And again, because I don't think you can necessarily look at Ty Sambrello as a future starter at that spot, just because the skill set does not match what a guy that you look at, you know, again, you can look at those 3.5 games and say, oh yeah, he played really well in those 3.5 games, but you can't look at his skill set and be like, oh, that's a guy that we can hitch our wagon to for the next 3.5 years, in my opinion. So I think even if the Falcons do decide to retain Ryan Schrader, they still have to use a high pick on an offensive tackle. The only change is that maybe they can wait until round 3 and take more of a developmental guy than necessarily needing to use a first or second round pick on that guy. But I think, you know, right now you're looking at Jake Matthews at left tackle. You're looking at Ty Sambrello locked into the swing tackle position. You still have an opening at right tackle. And then you have Matt Gano potentially competing with Sambrello for the swing tackle position. Although more than likely, if Gano makes the leap, makes the jump, shows improvement this year, the Falcons will just simply retain him and carry 4 offensive tackles on the roster, which is something that they've done most of the years that Dan Quinn has been here. Although that is partially due to the fact that the Falcons have not had great offensive tackle depth, which is one of the reasons why the Falcons were so willing to give a 5th round pick for Ty Sambrello 2 years ago, because they were basically desperate for offensive tackle depth. But that's a conversation for another day. Going back to the free agency question mark, I think it was always, at least in my eyes, likelier that the Falcons would more than likely address guard in free agency more so than offensive tackle. I think just the price tag of offensive tackles, even when you consider that right tackles are considerably cheaper than left tackles in today's NFL, typically a high-end right tackle is going to cost you 8 to 10, maybe $12 million a year if you think he's on the Lane Johnson level at the $12 million a year, while a high-end left tackle is going to start at 10, probably be 12 because Matt Khalil got 11. Jake Matthews just got 15. Nate Solder just got 15. So really it's 16 now. So it's one of those things where like the equivalent for a right tackle and a left tackle is about $4+ million difference in terms of annual average for those guys. So I think the price tag is too high for offensive tackles. And as I've said a number of times, there just aren't that many good offensive tackles available this offseason. You have Trent Brown, who I think is going to get paid like a left tackle and potentially be making Jake Matthews money after some team like the Cardinals or the Texans or the Jets, who's desperate for a left tackle and have a lot of cap space to spend, will pay him. You have guys like Juwan James, who I think is a solid player, but I think if you're going to pay Juwan James, and again, I think since Bobby Massey just got an $8 million a year extension, like to me, Juwan James's price tag starts at probably $9.5 million. And I just don't think Juwan James is worth $9.5 million to me. He's like, he's a better version of Sam Baker. Like, you know, he's fine, but like, he's not going to live up to that contract that you give him. You got Donovan Smith, who is probably going to get franchise tag based off of the recent reports. But again, because he's been a lifetime left tackle, and even though he's been underwhelming in that regard in the NFL, is probably going to, his price tag is going to start at $10 million a year at the very least, if not more, again, due to the desperation of certain teams. Like if you don't sign Trent Brown, then, you know, that probably means you're going to overpay for, you know, Donovan Smith. And then after that, you're just kind of looking at a whole bunch of unproven guys. You got Ty Nsekhe, but he's 34. So even if you sign him, he's at best a 1 year stopgap. You have Darrell Williams, who's showed promise in 2017, but has been dealing with injuries a lot. And so you're not going to be committed to him long term. I mean, outside of that, like, you know, like you're not really looking at a who's who of great offensive tackles. Like to me, probably the next most likely option for the Falcons is someone like a Mike Remmers, assuming he gets cut by the Vikings. Mike Remmers was okay for a couple of years as a starter in Carolina. But again, if you're signing Mike Remmers, you're basically signing him as at most a 1 year stopgap. You're not going to really be committed to him long term. So in terms of the Falcons offensive tackle needs, all signs have really been pointing to them all along for the Falcons to address their offensive tackle, right tackle hole in the draft, particularly when you consider that this has been one of the deeper draft classes at offensive tackle potentially. I haven't necessarily sat down and broke down all these guys, but from what I hear and what I've seen, this is probably arguably the best offensive tackle class that we've had in the last 5 years, going back to like 2013, when three out of the first four picks in that draft were offensive tackle. That draft also produced guys like David Bakhtiari and Teron Armstead and Ricky Wagner much later in that draft as well. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that you're going to be able to find a Teron Armstead or David Bakhtiari in round three or four like the Saints and Packers did that year. But I do think, you know, that 2013 class is definitely heads over heels better than any of the recent classes. The closest being like maybe the 2015 draft that produced guys like DJ Humphreys and a couple of other okay. I think Juwan James was that Juwan Wayne's James draft, or was he 2014? I can't remember. But so I do think the Falcons really can't afford to pass up on a quality offensive tackle. I think it goes back to sort of what I said earlier, which is, you know, we've talked about this as far as their guard, where the Falcons have basically punted on the guard position with their early round picks in each of the last 4 years, where there were several players that we thought the Falcons might draft to sort of be their long-term solution at guard. And, you know, their two picks that they wound up using at that position, Wes Schweitzer and Sean Harlow. While we've seen something from Wes Schweitzer, you know, I think Sean Harlow has been played well enough to earn a backup spot, but certainly has not looked anywhere close to being a viable long-term solution as a starter. And we know Wes Schweitzer is a question mark there. Like, if you're starting Wes Schweitzer, you can do a lot worse than Wes Schweitzer, but I don't think any teams right now, the Falcons, should be prepared to be like, oh yeah, Wes Schweitzer is going to start for us for the next 3+ years or something like that. It's like, if he starts this year, then so be it. But, you know, assuming that the Falcons don't have better alternatives. But they definitely need to draft a young guard, which they've punted on for the last four drafts, and they certainly need to draft a young offensive tackle. It's just they cannot punt on that position again, particularly given the circumstances that this is arguably one of the better offensive tackle classes that we've seen in 5 years. And, you know, hitching your wagon to Ryan Schrader and or Ty Sambrello in 2019 would be a grave mistake. And again, you don't have a great alternatives in free agency to sort of be like, oh, yeah, if we sign this guy, all of our offensive tackle problems go away. Trent Brown is a really good player. But I think if when he gets paid, it's going to be a similar situation to Nate Solder, where he's going to get paid a lot of money. And then, like, the team is going to be like, well, he's not worth $15 million a year. He's good. He's okay. But I wish we only paid like $9 or $10 million a year for what he's worth, you know? And then like 2 years later, you're looking to try to get a cheaper replacement, an upgrade, similar to what the Giants are probably going to be doing this year or next year in their draft to potentially replace Nate Solder. So it's one of those situations where, you know, all signs are just basically just pushing the Falcons to use one of their top two picks on an offensive tackle. And, you know, the difficulty with that is the unpredictability of the draft. And we'll sort of talk about how that could impact their plans coming up in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know about the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. And, you know, talking about the unpredictability of the draft, and this is one of the reasons why it's this early in the process, you can't really make accurate projections about the draft, because picking at 14, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if there's going to be one or two or three quarterbacks taken in the top 14 picks. I think there will definitely be one, but I don't know who that guy's going to be. It could be three. But you don't know, and if the more quarterbacks go, the more likely a position player is going to get pushed down the board, potentially helping the Falcons. But then again, you have situations like Denver, who made a move for Joe Flacco, and that's affecting their status at quarterback potentially. You have guys like Nick Foles and Ryan Tannehill potentially available that could teams could be look at this quarterback class and be like, I'd rather go with those guys for a year than trust Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins or Drew Lock or Daniel Jones or whoever it is. We'll have to see how that goes. The other factor is that, you know, when we get to free agency, certainly these teams that have similar needs to the Falcons on the offensive line and defensive line, if those teams wind up addressing those needs in free agency, then it's less likely that they'll take offensive and defensive linemen with their first pick, which potentially gives the Falcons more options to choose from at pick 14. But at the same time, if they don't address those needs in the free agency, in certain teams, you know, free agents prove too pricey or whatnot, then all of a sudden it becomes more likely that those teams will use their first round picks on offensive linemen and defensive linemen and pass rushers. And thus the Falcons' potential to sort of stay put at 14 and be able to get the guy that they want becomes less likely. So sitting here today on February, 19th, 20th, or whenever you're listening to this podcast, you know, basically until we get to like March 18th, which is the Monday after free agency starts, when for the most part free agency starts to peter out, like any draft projections, you know, between now and then is just basically at best a guess, you know, a shot in the dark is a very generous term for it. It's like throwing a golf ball in a snowstorm at night, you know, and trying to catch it or something like that. I don't know. I just made up that analogy off the top of my head. It's probably terrible. But but I think, you know, we'll have to sort of see sort of how the Falcons treat this situation, because it goes back to what I've said. Like, the Falcons have just basically punted on the offensive line the last couple of years. I mentioned this before with Sean Harlow. They used the fourth round pick on Sean Harlow 2 years ago. I don't really think Sean Harlow was worth a fourth round pick. I think he was a sixth round talent that the Falcons reached on because of their need at the position, which is, you know, something that teams do all the time. You can argue the Falcons did this, you know, a couple of years before that when they took Lamar Holmes at the end of round three, when he was like a fifth, sixth round talent that the Falcons reached on again because of need at the position, because Sam Baker was entering a contract year. And up till then, Sam Baker had done nothing to sort of solidify his status as a starting offensive tackle. But of course, the Falcons decided, you know, shortly thereafter that they were going to pay Sam Baker all that money, and that wound up blowing up in their face. But, you know, basically, long story short, not to sort of be overly critical here, but the current quote-unquote predicament that the Falcons find themselves in on the offensive line is the ripple effects of several years, you know, 7 or 8 years of questionable to downright bad moves along their offensive line. They've been able to sort of keep things afloat. Thankfully, they were able to discover a guy like Ryan Schrader in undrafted free agency back in 2013 that sort of made the Lamar Holmes pick work, you know, canceled out that pick. You know, they got 1 year of solid play from James Stone. They should have gotten 2 years, but unfortunately Mike Person came to be. That sort of helped sort of negate the Peter Kahn's whiff. Thankfully, they drafted Jake Matthews the same, you know, a year after whiffing on that Sam Baker contract. So they've been able to sort of stay afloat, you know, Alex Mack, the signing, Andy Levitre trade. So they've been able to sort of make a couple of moves to sort of keep things on track. But they've just basically been treading water in a lot of ways on the offensive line. And I think, you know, when you hear Thomas Dimitroff talk about we're going to solve the offensive line issues, I do think that strongly hints that the Falcons have figured it out potentially and will wind up drafting and truly investing in their offensive line with this draft. Again, whether that's the first round pick, I don't know, again, because sitting here today, it depends on who's available. Like, you know, you can sit here and be like, oh, the Falcons should take an offensive tackle with pick 14. But if there isn't a guy worth that pick and you're staring at an edge rusher or defensive tackle that is, then you're going to take, you should take the edge rusher or defensive tackle or potentially trade back or wait till round two. And maybe there is a guy that's worth that pick at pick 45, or you're willing to trade up from 45 to 36 or something to get the offensive tackle that you think is worth it, or whatever the case may be. So, like, you know, I think the Falcons are in a position where they can sort of address their offensive tackle needs, their offensive guard needs. But long story short, I'm rambling and just basically going over the same points. But I think the Falcons, regardless of what the Falcons do at free agency, whether they seriously address the offensive line needs in free agency, they have to draft some offensive linemen. They have to draft an offensive tackle. You know, I'll say their first three picks, but I think waiting to pick 80 to draft an offensive tackle is not a great decision. I just don't know if there's going to be a talented guy there. When you pick there, I think you're just basically going to be taking a guy just to take a guy based off of how I think the draft is going to go. But we'll see. Again, it's early to really project that point. I just said, you know, take it with a grain of salt. So take that with a grain of salt. And I think, you know, whether it's in the first, second, third, or fourth round, I think the Falcons need to take a guard. And I think hopefully, unlike the Sean Harlow pick, if they wind up waiting till round three or four to take a guard, then it's a guy that's worthy of that pick, that is widely considered to be, you know, a third or fourth round talent, which was not the case the last time they did that. So, you know, I just can't see the Falcons basically spending money in free agency on the offensive line. It's just not enough talent there. It's not enough good talent there, particularly at offensive tackle. You can make the case that there's some more talented players at guard. You got a guy like Roger Saffold, but he's 31 years old. You know, he's had a rich injury history. Are you going to pay $10 million a year for basically 1 or 2 years of Roger Saffold? I mean, are you that desperate when you could just take a good guard? You know, like it just for, you know, probably for less than a tenth of the price. Just take a guard and draft, you know. It just would be weird to me to see the Falcons go all out and continue to invest in these old short-term fixes on the offensive line and basically neglect in the draft for, you know, an eighth year rather than, you know, an eighth consecutive draft rather than investing there. So that's basically all I wanted to say today, guys. You know, I think with the Sam Brailer move, I think it secures their depth. I think it, you know, gives Matt Gano someone to push. And we'll sort of hopefully have some stable depth at the offensive tackle position. But I think as far as a starter goes, we'll have to see. As far as other impending free agents, I think I mentioned this on a previous episode where I basically said after the Bruce Carter and Stephen Means re-signings, that the Falcons would probably just be looking to sign any and everybody that is willing to agree to a veteran minimum deal between now and the start of free agency. And if you're not willing to do so, then you'll probably be allowed to test the market. I should have said at that time, if I didn't, with Sam Brailer probably being the most prominent exception to that. But, you know, that probably means guys like Ben Garland, potentially Kamal Ishmael, but I think that's less likely with Carter re-signed. Logan Paulson, Jordan Richards, and Bleedy Ray Wilson potentially are the most likely guys that you could see other contract extensions come between now and the start of free agency on March 13th. I think everybody else is probably going to be allowed to test free agency. We'll have to sort of see about Matt Schaub. I think, as I've mentioned before, I think the Falcons will try to bring back Bruce Irvin, but I think because Bruce Irvin's contract is not going to be cheap, I sort of expect him to want to be able to hit free agency before deciding on what he's going to do. And of course, you know, Tevin Coleman is another guy that I think the Falcons would love to bring back, but it's probably going to be too expensive and probably wind up with the Jets or somebody like that this offseason. So we'll have to see how the rest of that goes. And Justin Bethel is another guy that I think the Falcons would love to bring back, but I suspect Justin Bethel is going to want to, you know, make more than, you know, the veteran minimum this year. So he'll probably also hit free agency like we saw last year with him in Arizona. So looking at the rest of their free agents, you know, I don't expect them to re-sign Zane Beadles or John Kondo or Justin Hardy or Terrell McClain or Derek Shelby, so, or Andy Levitre. So, and, you know, obviously Grady Jarrett's going to get tagged if he doesn't get a contract extension soon. So there you have it. There's another summary of sort of my expectations for free agents moving forward with the Falcons' plans. So I think this move, again, signals that the Falcons intend to draft an offensive tackle, but I don't think it's going to be because of this or something like that. So we'll see how it goes. Unless there's another move that the Falcons make, other breaking news that I will have to talk about on tomorrow's episode, let's do a Q&A. Let's plan for a Q&A, and if you want to send in your questions, you can do so to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. You can do so on Facebook, sending them to the page Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. If you hate social media and you prefer email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com is the email address. And, of course, you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.